This morning, we're pleased to have back with us again Phil Nixon. He is an extension entomologist with University of Illinois, and occasionally, particularly when things are warm and insects are active, he's good enough to come here and answer questions. So if you have some kind of bug problem, if it's in the house, if it's in the home landscape or home garden, call on and tell us about it. Give us the best description, and Phil will suggest how you might deal with it. 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Glad to have you with us once again.
Good to be here.
We were just talking about, before we got going, of course, what else? Japanese beetles. And I had said that I've been on the lookout, and so far I had not seen one, but there are some reports now that they're out there and they're around.
They're here.
We know.
But not very numerous yet, apparently. I've not seen any. We have had several reports of people seeing them. And so we don't know for sure how many are going to show up. We did have some cold weather that helped, that may have helped knock down a number of larvae. A dip that froze in the ground around in central Illinois was about 15 inches, and in northern Illinois about 30 inches. Maintained that temperature for about 2 months, and we know that if larvae of Japanese beetles are exposed to freezing temperatures for more than 6 weeks, they normally don't make it. And they don't usually go too deep down into the soil, so we were optimistic we wouldn't have any, but we are going to have some. How many is yet to be determined. Typically, they show up in the last week of June, and typically by now we would have a good idea. But everything's been coming out about a week late this spring. It's been a little cool part of the time. So it may still happen in a big way.
All right. Well, we just cross our fingers and hope it won't be too bad.
Yeah, well, you know, it's... But this is a good time in which people should be watching their trees and shrubs. They tend to attack roses and grapes and raspberries and crabapples, apples, linden, birch, willows, and other trees and shrubs, but primarily those are the big ones. And we do know that they like to feed in places where others have fed previously. So if you can go out every day or every other day and hand pick the beetles off, we recommend a jar with some soapy water or some rubbing alcohol in it. And if you touch the beetle or get close to the beetle, he'll fold his legs and drop straight off the leaf. If you have a jar underneath, you'll catch him and kill him. And if you can keep him off, particularly for the first couple of weeks, then guess who has the damaged plants? It's the neighbor. And so the neighbors will get the beetles more than you, and they'll have much more damage. So starting out this early, when they're first showing up, is the ideal time if you want to do your non-chemical control of the beetles.
Mm-hmm. And if you do, if there's some plant that they really like that you really want to try to protect, then you're going to have to spray.
Then you're probably going to have to spray, and we recommend Carbaryl, which is sold as 7, or Cyflufrin, which is sold as Bayer Advanced Garden insect killer. And either one of them will last for about 2 weeks, and the beetles are out till in heavy numbers until about the middle of August. So spraying 3 times, 2 weeks apart, will pretty well protect those plants. And, you know, if there are other plants that aren't all that important to you to look real nice, don't worry about it. No need to spray everything. The beetles, it won't make a whole lot of difference the number of beetles that you have come into the plants you're trying to protect if you try to kill everything in your yard, so to speak. So just spray it. Just treat those that are very important near your entranceways and things of that nature where they're very obvious.
Okay. And that'll kill a lot of stuff.
Yeah. It's something that when you apply it, you want to make sure that you keep it off of the flowers because it will kill bees and other beneficial insects coming to the blossoms. But sprayed on the foliage should be fine.
All right. Phil Nixon is our guest this morning. He's an extension entomologist from U of I. And if you have questions about dealing with insect pests around the home, could be inside, could also be outside in the home, landscape, or garden, you should give us a call. The lines, however, at the moment are full, so you'll have to wait for a bit. We'll start out with a caller in Mattoon, and that's on line number 4. Hello.
Yes, good morning. Mm-hmm. I have a question. The last couple of weeks, we seem to notice, like in the evenings in the house, that we get bit by some sort of an insect. You might find 4 or 5 bites on yourself in the morning. They're like red, and they're maybe 1/8 to 1/4 inch in diameter. It only seems to be like this time of year, and I think we noticed it last year at the same time. We don't have any pets or anything out on the house.
Sometimes what that'll be caused, it's not on any particular part of your body, right?
No, it's just more or less all over, all right. Or say a warm part of your body, I guess.
Okay. Commonly what this is caused by are going to be spiders at night, might get into your bed and as you roll over, you're crushing them and they will bite in self-defense. There is, not a whole lot you can do about that. Spiders are difficult to control in the house. Dust type insecticides are most effective. Some of the silica gel materials are available to homeowners. Otherwise, a professional pest control operator will have a dust type pyrethroid insecticide that can be used. That, unfortunately, those aren't available to the general public. So, those will help reduce the number of spiders in the house. That may be what you're responding to. One way to find out is that you can put what we call sticky traps, which would be, they look like roach motels. In fact, roach motels will work. They're essentially a board that has sticky material on it. You place those along the baseboards. If you have spiders in very high numbers at all in your house, they will get caught at night running along the edge of a wall there. And you'll get a pretty good idea of how many there are and what kind there are. So that's a way to find out whether you have spiders to start with. But that's, bites that show up like that are most likely that. Another possibility can be that that you may have some sort of an allergic reaction to food or something else, and you scratch yourself at night and create the bite. And that can happen as well. So if it's something that you tend to eat at this time of year that's unusual from what you normally do, it may be a food allergy, maybe something else that way. That can also be a possibility.
Now, these spiders, we've never been able to see that particular insect. Are they just normal, like house spider, or are they something a lot smaller that you never would see?
No, they're big enough to see, but they're typically going to be active at night, and so you may not see them just because you're not you just don't notice them. They can be walking along a ceiling or along the side, and really don't come out until the middle of the night, and you may not be up to see them at that time. So that's probably as much it as anything. If you do get up in the middle of the night, you're normally a little blurry-eyed. You're not going to see something like that.
Exactly. And they normally would be, like our experience, seem to be more prevalent during this hot weather.
They can be any time of the year. Many times people get bit in the middle of the winter when they're going to crawl into a warm bed because everything else is cold. You drop the thermostat at night. But in this kind of weather, any time of the year, they can be numerous, and they more will come in at this time of year. So it's a possibility that would be, it's hard to say. It would be, before you really do any spraying, it would be good to try to trap them and see if you do have something that's happening that way.
All right, we'll try that. Thank you.
Uh-huh. All right, thank you for the call. Next up, we have someone in Champaign, line number one. Hello.
Hello?
Yes.
I have a problem with cedar-boring bees on my porch.
Okay.
And I'm hoping we can get rid of them. We don't know how to get rid of them.
Well, you won't like my answer, but that's I'm assuming the cedar has got some age to it. It's got several years of age on it.
Probably.
Uh-huh. What will happen is you'll get carpenter bees. We have two kinds, a smaller and larger carpenter bee.
Okay.
The larger one will make a hole about a half an inch in diameter, a smaller one about a quarter of an inch in diameter. And they'll be perfectly round, and they'll go into wood, particularly unpainted wood. And as cedar or redwood gets older and loses some of its protective qualities, they will attack it as well. Once you have an opening like that, you can put this Carbaryl or 7 dust around the opening, and as they go in and out, they'll pick this up, and that will kill the individual.
Okay.
You want to leave the hole open because you're likely to have young bees come out of there later in the summer.
Yeah, there seem to be a lot of them.
If you clog up the hole, they'll each make their own hole, so instead of one hole, you have 8 holes or something along that line. They have a tendency to not like to attack painted or varnished wood, and so putting a coat of paint on your nice cedar sign you love to see unpainted may help reduce them. It works about two-thirds of the time in helping keep them away. Otherwise, you're looking at using the 7 dust around the opening as they show up in the spring.
Well, thank you for telling me what to use.
Okay,
thanks for the call. And then you want to, once the bees, because what's happening is that the parent bee is laying eggs in there,
right.
And then they develop, and then they come out. So that's why you don't want to clock it up until that's done.
Right.
Then at the end of the,
yes.
In the fall, when they have all come out, then you can
Then you can caulk the hull and paint the wood if necessary or whatever the case may be. But, yeah, what they'll do is they'll go in and they will tunnel as much as 2 feet up the board. And then they start provisioning cells that they create in that tunnel with pollen and nectar and they'll do a series of these, an egg in each one, and then the adult normally dies off. The egg hatches, the larva feeds on the pollen, becomes full-grown pupates, comes out as an adult bee. And what I find, a lot of people think, well, you know, if we caulk this hole, fill in this hole, then whatever's in there can't get out. Not thinking long enough to realize that if the bee was able to chew the hole into the wood, the kids will be able to chew a hole out of the wood. Mm-hmm. And so I get some calls sometimes of, well, I caulked a hole, but now instead of one hole, I have 7 holes in a row right across here. And what happened is typically if the whole main hole is open, they will all come back out the hole that mom made. If it's closed, then they may each make their own hole. So you have a hole about every inch right down the board.
Yeah. All right. We have some other calls here. They're in Champaign as well. So we'll go next to line number 2.
Hi.
Hello. Yes.
I've seen advertised several devices, some relatively expensive, for getting rid of the mosquitoes on your property.
Mm-hmm.
Some work with a propane tank to produce mm-hmm. carbon dioxide, and some with what they call sonic energy. Are any of these devices effective?
We have limited data on the mosquito magnet, that which is, as you might guess, the most expensive one. It's normally in the realm about $800 or more. And it's a propane tank operation which produces carbon dioxide, and it has been shown effective in some limited testing, some pretty extreme testing on some islands off the coast of Florida, that they actually close in the summer because they get too many mosquitoes. They keep people from going on them because they can't control the mosquitoes. They found that they were pretty effective there, but they haven't. That data hasn't really been duplicated that much. So we know that one has some results on it. Most of the other traps that you can buy, the ones that have the ultraviolet light, the purple light, the bug zappers, actually will increase the likelihood of you getting bit because they will bring the mosquitoes from a long distance. And female mosquitoes looking for a blood meal don't go all the way to the trap. They then start looking for a blood meal once they get in the vicinity of a trap. So one of those will actually increase the amount of bites you have. That's been known for years, but we can't get them off the market because of the law is the way they're written. It doesn't have to show that it can work. Most of the others have been shown to be of limited value as well. In general, the only trap that I'm aware of that has any data which shows that it is effective is a mosquito magnet.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. Thanks for the call. And to another Champaign person, line number 3. Hello.
I'm calling about 2 different kinds of crickets in the house.
Mm-hmm.
There are those that have sort of an arched body and long legs. And
those are called camel crickets.
And they probably look worse than they really are. And then there are the black singing crickets that come out at a certain time of the year, later in the summer, I guess.
Those are called field crickets. The camel crickets are, as you mentioned, are very long-legged. They have very long antennae. They don't chirp. And typically when they jump about 3 feet at a shot. Get some interesting phone calls about those. They will reproduce in a basement where it's nice and damp. And they're probably not going to cause a whole lot of damage. They may feed on the ends of some rugs, area rugs, things of that nature you may have down there. But they're probably not going to cause any real damage. They're feeding mainly on molds and mildews. And you can live with them if you want, or you can use an aerosol ant and roach spray in cracks and crevices to get rid of them. Caulking cracks and crevices in the foundation on the outside and not having bark mulch or fallen leaves next to the house will reduce their living out there, which will reduce the number that come inside. The field crickets, the black ones, same story. They can also do some damage, although the field crickets normally aren't going to reproduce in the house or not going to live in the house very long. Typically, an individual that comes in will normally only live for a couple weeks. You may have the crickets in the house for longer than that, but it's different individuals. As the fall comes and it gets cold, within a couple weeks they'll all die out. You won't have any more for the rest of the winter into the spring. So, again, a live and let live thing works with both types of insects, but aerosol ant and roach sprays around cracks and crevices in the basement will help get rid of them, and caulking cracks and crevices and foundation will help keep them from coming in, and reducing the mulch and so on outside will, next to the foundation, will reduce their numbers.
Well, thanks a lot.
You're welcome. Right,
thank you. And let's go next to Chicago, line number 4. Hello.
Hello. I have a question, but I did not get the product for the bees outside.
Okay. Material, the common name is Carbaryl, but where you'll find it is sold as 7, S-E-V-I-N. And you want to use a dust formulation. It'll be sold as 7 dust. And it works because the dry dust attaches electrostatically to the hairs of a bee, then they groom themselves and get it into their body.
And then how do you use that?
You would just put a very small amount around the hole that they're going in and out. Many of these come in a bottle that will kind of blow out a small amount of the insecticide, or you can put a little bit on a tissue, a Kleenex, if you will, and daub it around the hole late in the evening when they're not as active, and then throw away the tissue. Yeah, as late in the evening as you can still see to do it without a flashlight, because if you disturb them, they'll fly to the light, and you don't want to be holding the light.
What's the best way of spraying your around the outside of your house and your doors and windows, and when and what sort of products?
Well, generally what we have available for an outdoor foundation spray are going to be permethrin-type materials. There's a variety of brand names that you'll find in garden centers, but it's permethrin, P-E-R-M-E-T-H-R-I-N, and one product commonly is 8 insect spray, and there are others as well. These will provide protection for about a month. This we recommend as only a short-term answer. The long-term answer is caulking cracks and crevices in your foundation so you don't have as much places for the insects to come in, and then also making sure that you don't have decaying organic matter next to the foundation that will feed these insects or be prey feed their prey for other insects and spiders that may come in. So we don't recommend the spraying as a general course. If you were going to do it once a year, it would probably be sometime in early to mid-September when things start coming in for the fall.
No organic matter around the house. What do you mean by that?
Accumulations of fallen leaves or bark mulch. Particularly bark mulch is a very popular thing for people to put around their house. But as that breaks down, that is food source for crickets and springtails and a variety of different types of creatures, and then these in turn provide prey for spiders and centipedes and a variety of other things, all of which eventually will work their way in through cracks and crevices into the house. So, putting a smorgasbord out for them is the best way to get these things in your house.
I had put a bunch of leaves, fallen leaves, in the front of our foundation. There's like a stone wall about 3 feet high, and then the evergreens in there. And then my sister had said that in the front closet there were ants.
Okay. Well, these...
That could have been from that?
Could have been related somewhat. The ants are generally scavengers and will feed on some of that decaying organic matter,
plus little critters in there.
So, and then once they get in that area, they'll come through cracks and crevices. Typically, when ants come into the house, they've just found a way in, and you can, if you can figure out how they may have gotten in and caught cracks and crevices, that helps, or use ant baits, are pretty effective.
Ant baits.
Yeah, particularly those made by Combat are probably the most effective.
Oh. And my last question is, we had a large anthill one year in the front of the house on the lawn.
Yeah.
How do you handle that?
Well, you can open up the top of an individual anthill like that and use permethrin insecticide into the anthill, and that will kill off that individual anthill.
What's it called?
Permethrin. It's a material I mentioned earlier for along the foundation. Mm-hmm. And that will eliminate that anthill. We do not recommend spraying small anthills or just every anthill or anything of this nature, because for one thing, they'll just come right back once the insecticide breaks down. But if you have a large one that's killing the mower when you mow over it and this sort of thing, then you can eliminate that anthill with a permethrin in the open nest at the top.
Well, thank you for your knowledge.
Okay.
Thank you for the call. Our telephone number here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We also have a toll-free line. That one's good anywhere. You can hear us, 800-222-9455. And our guest is Phil Nixon. He's an extension entomologist with U of I. Having problems with insect pests around the home, you can call us. We have had a question here for somebody who would like to have you talk a little bit about centipedes and millipedes, and I guess that they're interested in knowing a little bit about what conditions they like, why it is that they're coming into the house, what you can do about that if you have them in the house. Tell us about these guys.
That's a good that follows right up with the last caller, because this is another one of these things that comes in from the outside. And millipedes are close relatives to insects, but are not insects, and they feed on decaying organic matter. And so mulches and so on along the foundation are just perfect for it. A centipede is a predatory critter. A millipede is going to have many, many legs, and it's going to be slow-moving, hard-shelled, and when it dies in a coil. Centipedes are very fast-moving, many-legged creatures, elongated. They feed on other critters, insects and other small animals, and so I tend to tell people, think about them as kind of a strange-looking spider. What they do is kind of the same thing. Both types of creatures need high humidities, high moisture levels in order to survive. And so typically you're going to find them along the outside where they've got high moisture levels, such as mulches and fallen leaves, et cetera. Indoors, the highest moisture level is typically in the basement. So you'll see them there occasionally upstairs. None of them are considered particularly dangerous. Particularly the millipedes are not easily controlled by any insecticide. You'll get almost no control with any type of material you put down. The reason is because insecticides are developed for insects, and millipedes, albeit relatively close relatives, are not insects. So their physiologies are enough different that they really don't get controlled by that. Centipedes are a little more controllable with insecticides. But the bottom line is reduce the dead organic matter along the outside foundation, caulk cracks and crevices in the foundation, and if your basement is humid, then perhaps consider a dehumidifier or something to keep the air drier down there.
All right. Very good. On back here to callers, and we'll go next to line number one, and this is Urbana. Hello.
Hi. Just a thought about keeping insects away from you when you're outside. If you're sitting still or staying in one area, what I've found works for me when we have a group and want to be out on our deck is to set up a couple of fans.
Mm-hmm. I commonly will recommend that where somebody is wanting to protect themselves, say, from mosquitoes when they're barbecuing or something like that. A window fan blowing across them will produce enough of a wind speed that they really cannot maneuver in that high of a wind and figure out how to land on you and bite you.
Yeah.
It's a very good idea. I use it commonly. Thanks for the call.
Thanks. Oh, I have a question.
Sure.
It's more of a question. We were with relatives and this past week, and one was talking about the neighbors were letting their grass grow really, really tall, and she was concerned about it being a quote, nesting place for mosquitoes. And I said, I'd be more worried about people who didn't clean their gutters. I didn't think grass was, quote, nest. Mosquitoes don't nest.
No, the adults will tend to hide in foliage areas. So although the tall grass would provide a place for the adult mosquitoes to sit during the daytime, so do the shrubs, so do the flower beds, so do the trees. It's really not adding any real problem that way to any great extent. And you're perfectly right. Standing water is a much bigger problem because that's where the larvae are going to survive and grow up. And the clogged gutters, the old tires, the bird baths and wading pools that have water sitting in them more than a week, these sorts of things are much more of a source of mosquitoes than tall grass.
Thanks.
All right. Thank you for the call. To the next caller, and that would be on line number three in Mahomet.
Good
Hello.
Morning.
Yes.
This is a bagworm question.
Mm-hmm.
Sandy Mason in Saturday's News Gazette said that bagworms could be sprayed now.
That's right. I read her article. It was very good.
Yeah, late June and early July. Is one spraying sufficient?
If you do it now, it is.
Okay.
If you got excited and found out that they hatched 2 weeks ago and went out and sprayed it then, you're probably going to have to spray again. But that's why we in extension try to get people to hold off until the first week of July, last of June, because what will happen is when the bagworms hatch out, they climb to the top of the tree as little caterpillars, drop down on silk strands that are 2 or 3 feet long and blow in the wind. And they will do that for about 2 weeks until they finally decide to settle down and feed. And so the 2 weeks has gone by from the time they hatch, so now they should be settling down to feeding. And a treatment now will give you control with one application. And we recommend BTK, the Bacillus thuringiensis christaci, which is sold as Dipel or Thuricide, is the main product to use for controlling those.
Must I spray other than just the spruce trees?
You want to spray anything that is being attacked, and the best way to tell if they're being attacked, particularly if the trees are fairly large, is use binoculars. You'll be able to see what they do in their young larvae is they will feed on the surface of the foliage, and you'll get light areas of the foliage. The foliage will look whitish or lighter green in areas where they're feeding. They feed most heavily on spruce, arborvitae, and eastern red cedars and other junipers, but they'll also be common on deciduous trees. Crab apples are a common host, so are birches. I've seen them on oaks. There's a variety of things they will be on, but usually they're worst on arborvitae, junipers, including eastern red cedar and spruces.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Uh-huh. Right, thank Bye. You. And to Urbana next, line number two. Hello.
Yes, I have a rather general question just about the field of entomology. Every time I listen to this program, I'm sort of struck by what I perceive is an academician applying his knowledge very practically, but it seems to me it would be analogous to my calling up a talk show with John Audubon and asking him about how to best hunt and kill game birds. I suspect that he was attracted to the field of entomology more as a biologist or something like that, and yet his practical application of it is I guess, emotionally at the other end of the spectrum. And I'm just curious if he could talk about how he got interested in entomology and how he found the reality of how he applies that knowledge to be different from what emotionally or intellectually first attracted him to the field.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you. I'm going to hang up and listen.
Okay.
Believe it or not, I've answered that question many times before. I know hundreds of entomologists, professional entomologists around the country. I've yet to run across one who got into this business simply because they wanted to rid the world of a pest. Practically all of them got into it because they found the animals fascinating. And for my own situation, I was one of these kids that, you know, if Phil wasn't around, he was probably down at the pond, town pond, looking to see what was in the water and what was crawling around on the shore. Was a biology major and then a zoology major. And you get to a point somewhere towards the latter part of your undergraduate where you decide that, hey, you know, you might like to have a job. And where people get paid is where you have pests. And so practically all entomologists that I know got into it because they thought animals were neat, they thought insects were neat, and the bottom line is that if you're going to work in this field, and there are plenty of jobs that are in non-economic areas, May Barenbaum, who's on this show from time to time, is a great example of a person who's at the top of her field in that area. She's known internationally for her knowledge. But many of us, the jobs are much easier to find, in more of an area where you're actually controlling the insects. So how do I handle that I love the bugs just for being bugs, but then I tell people how to kill them? My answer to that and my rationale is that, I tell people how to do it in such a way that they're not seriously harming the environment in the process. They are being very selective at how they're trying to control those insects. And in the long run, there are millions and millions of insects that are not being killed because I'm telling people how to control them the correct way.
Mm. And I think it, I also want to say that there have been, you know, Phil's been doing this for a long time with us, and there have been occasions, a number of occasions where I think and what he tries to ask people is, can you live with this?
Yeah.
Because if you can, then maybe you should just take a live and let live sort of tack. And then if the person we're talking to says, no, I cannot live with this, then you say, well, okay, here's what I want it, it'll tell you to do. But we want to tailor it to the thing that we're talking about. So you got to make sure you know what it is that you're trying to do. Do the best approach, and then do the thing that is going to get rid of the thing that you think is a problem and cause the least problem to all of the other insects. Like we were talking before about the spraying of the seven. You know, maybe you have some plant that's really important to you. It's going to get mauled by Japanese beetles, and you want to say, okay, I want to take care of that plant and take care of that insect. But you also want to be careful that you don't damage other insects that are beneficial or they're not a problem. So you don't, and I think you've been really good about saying, you know, to people, don't do indiscriminate kind of, don't spray everything. Right. Don't, you know, and be very careful. Follow the directions. Know what you're trying to control. And I think that's all good. That's all information that's for
there. Yeah, there's some ecology that comes in around the edges. For instance, in the question about the Japanese beetles, indicated that, you know, if those trees aren't that those trees aren't as important in your landscape, don't worry about them. You're reducing the amount of spray application in that process. The idea that the insecticides will last for 2 weeks, you only need to spray every 2 weeks. There are other people who go out there and spray every other day because there might have seen one on there. That greatly reduced the amount of insecticide being applied. I feel good about those sorts of things. Practically every question that I answer will have something that we call integrated pest management involved, where you look at various methods of controlling it, the pests coming in from a foundation. I talked about mulch and caulking. These are non-chemical methods. These are ecologically useful methods in helping reduce the number of insects inside the house. Bottom line is there's over a million species of animals on this earth. We're one of them. We got to learn how to live with the rest of them.
Yeah. And insect is that's the most numerous.
Yes, the most numerous. Three-quarters of all the animals in this earth are insects, different kinds.
Well, let's get back to the phones here. We'll talk next with somebody in Rantoul, line number one. Hello.
Hi. Say, I haven't been listening to the program until just now, and I don't know if you've talked about these, but I have a problem with earwigs.
Okay.
And they aren't as bad this year as they've been in past years, but I do find, you know, like one or two every day, and even in the upper levels of the house, and I have no idea how they're getting in.
Well, the earwigs are general scavengers. They're feeding on decaying organic matter, and we'll be feeding on mulches next to the foundation, accumulated dead leaves, or just organic matter in the soil. They come in through cracks and crevices in the foundation, and caulking those will help, making sure your door thresholds fit tight. This will help keep them out. Excuse me, keep them out. The other thing is that they are not a problem in the fact of maintaining themselves or reproducing in the house. They have to lay their eggs in soil, and they have to be in temperate soil. They will not lay their eggs and survive in the soil in a house plant or something like that. So what will happen is they may be in your house for 2 or 3 or 4 weeks, maybe even as much as 6 weeks. They'll feed on decaying organic matter. They'll hide in cracks and crevices in the daytime, come out at night. But the bottom line is they're not going to reproduce. They're not going to increase. They're not going to become a problem like, say, cockroaches would be. So it's really a situation where you can use an ant and roach spray in cracks and crevices to get rid of those that are inside. You can caulk cracks and crevices in the foundation to help get them in. Reduce that organic matter alongside the foundation if there is any. And these will help reduce the problem. And even if you do have some inside, realize that they will die themselves and without reproducing, and so they will not become a major problem.
Oh, okay. I found just an abundance of them in an empty large trash can.
Yeah, as long as they will hide in cracks and crevices in the daytime, and so it's not uncommon for, you know, I've gotten many calls of people that, well, their kids are out swimming and they threw the swimsuit on the basement floor and they lifted up the swimsuit the next day and there were 50 or 60 or 100 earwigs underneath of it.
Yeah.
It was a damp cracker crevice to them. You know, and the same thing, they'll get in the, in these lawn chairs and chaises that are made out of aluminum tubing, and they'll be in large numbers inside those.
And
any crack or crevice they'll hide in during the daytime, and they're not doing anything, and they're just hiding.
Are they looking for moist places?
They look like something moist and dark, yes. But and then they'll come out at night to feed, and they have a variety of feeding habits. Interestingly enough, they are known to be major predators of fleas and will eat adult fleas in large numbers. But they also will feed on plant material. They'll feed on flower petals. They'll feed on lettuce. They'll feed on various types of the leaves of many types of flowers, such as zinnias and marigolds and so on. But mainly they're scavengers feeding on dead organic matter, and the less of that you have next to your house, the fewer earwigs will be there, so the fewer will come into your house.
Okay, I just wondered, are they sending a couple scouts out every day into my house?
No, they're individuals. They're just working on their own.
Oh, okay, because I find like one or two every day.
Yeah, it's just a matter of what they do is, if you think about it, if you're a critter that's living alongside its foundation and you're liking to hide in a crack or crevice during the daytime, you're going to work into that crack or crevice and try to get as deep as you can. Well, if that crack goes all the way through to the inside of a basement, all of a sudden, gee, here I am inside the house.
Oh, okay.
That's kind of how they get in.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Urban and X, line two. Hello.
Hello. The last couple of evenings, I've heard what I think are cicadas, and I thought that they appeared later on in the summer, but I also know that there's a few different kinds. Could you comment on whether what I heard is likely a cicada and what's going on?
Well, we do have an emergence of periodical cicadas in the Chicago suburbs, but if you're not that far north, that's probably not what you're hearing. They are singing primarily during the daytime. We do also have some katydids that are and tree crickets that are getting full grown and are adult at this time, and they will make some up and down type songs that will tend to sound somewhat like cicadas. But you're correct, the main cicadas that we have that are going to be singing in the evening are going to be the annual or dog day cicadas, and they're not likely to show up until the end of July or somewhere around in that time. But chances are good that if you're hearing something that sounds cicada-like in the evening, it's one of the katydids or crickets related to the grass in the grasshopper groups.
Are they up in the trees?
Many of them are. In fact, we always get an interesting call about every year of there's what's called a true katydid, which likes to sit in the tops of the trees and sing. And this song can normally be heard a block away. And the male will sit on the top of a tree and start singing about 11 o'clock at night and run till 2:30 or 3 in the morning. I've had over the years numerous people who have tape recorded this call because they could not sleep at night with their open windows next to the top of a tree. You know, he's just trying to catch him a girlfriend. and they will do this for several weeks on end. They will make noise at night, and there are very numerous species that will, some species sing in the daytime, some at night, some in the evening, some in the morning. The time of day will give you some idea what kind it is, but there are numerous species that will feed at night and sit in trees.
Thank you so much.
No, you're welcome. Thanks. So that's funny because, you know, actually I was out last night doing a little cooking, and I thought that also I heard cicada. And it was, and I thought to myself, well, this is the first time I've heard this sound this year. And it was just one little chorus, you know, the rise and fall, and that was that. And it struck me as being a little out of place. It sure sounded like cicada to me.
Well, it's also possible that one can emerge early. You know, when we have a periodical cicada emergence, we commonly start seeing occasional ones coming up 2 years before they emerge and a year after they emerge. Certainly for the dog day cicada, and there are various other cicadas that would come out earlier in the year, that it could be one of them as well. But the common dog day, it's not without possibility that one might come out a little bit early. As you might guess, if you're a guy that comes out and there's no gal around, you're not going to that's called natural selection against you. You know, you're not going to reproduce. You're not going to carry your genes on. So it's possible that there are a few cicadas out, but we would not see them typically for another month.
All right. We have about 10 minutes left here with Phil Nixon. He's an extension entomologist with University of Illinois, and he's here occasionally on the show. We talk about dealing with insect pests around the home. You have questions, you can call us 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. Someone apparently just wanted to, if you could mention again what sort of spray is recommended for dealing with the bagworms.
The bagworms, we recommend using Bacillus thuringiensis kirstaki. If you go into a garden center and say you want some BTK, B as in boy, T as in Tom, K as in Carrie Wood. There we go. BTK. Or common brand names are Dipel, D-I-P-E-L, or Thuricide, T-H-U-R-I-C-I-D-E. This is a bacterial insecticide. It kills only caterpillars. It's very effective against them. There are other insecticides that are effective as well, but these are, this is the one that will do a, one of, it does a very, very good job on the bagworms, and not near all insecticides do. Bagworms are resistant to many insecticides, and it also has the advantage that other than other caterpillars, it's not going to cause any harm to other critters out there.
All right. Got a cell phone caller here, line four. We'll get to them. Hello.
Yeah, hi. Mm-hmm. What can you do about deer fly, black fly, the ones that look like little stealth bombers that really bite you? And I haven't been able to find anything that traps them, kills them, controls them, or anything. You got any ideas?
The deer fly, well, deer fly and black fly are two different critters. I'm assuming you're talking about the one that are about a quarter of an inch long and kind of yellowish looking. That
little yellow, and okay. They are shaped like a stealth bomber.
Okay, yeah, those are deer flies, and. There are a couple things you can do. One is that the insect repellents that are available containing DEET, D-E-E-T, cutters are off around a 30% solution. Materials are quite effective in repelling them. Another thing that is commonly used and appears to have very good effectiveness is that because they tend to zoom around your ears and the back of your head, at least initially when they're looking you over and seeing if you're worth eating or not, they will... there are some camping supply company, camping stores will sell a sticky piece of paper that you can put on the back of your hat, and that will many times catch them. I've heard that dryer sheets will repel them somewhat, stuck back there. Dryer sheets, like you put in your clothes dryer?
I'll be doing.
Well, the sheets. I don't have any substantiation of that. I've heard it from several people, however. But in general, we're looking repellents in places in southern Illinois where it seemed like that they were just lining up to bite you.
Right.
The DEET materials worked very, very well when I was a graduate student and collecting in swampy areas down there. But the insects are, the larvae live in damp soils. You can't really do anything about the larvae. About all you can do is protect yourself from the adults. And they do make very painful bites because consider that a mosquito is feeding kind of like a hypodermic needle that sticks a little tube in and sucks blood. The analogy to a deer fly or horse fly is they carry a butcher knife that they slice the skin and then lap up the blood that comes out. The bite is very painful compared to that of a mosquito.
Are there no traps for them? Anything that you can put out that'll reduce the population?
I'm not aware of any traps. The people that tend to get into traps more than anything else for biting flies are livestock people, and they use primarily dip rubs and so on. I don't know of any traps that are very effective against that type of fly.
And no generalized fogging sprays or anything like that?
No, they're not really. Foggings are not really going to be very effective. These are very strong flyers, will come from a long distance. They'll fly a block in, say, 30 seconds. So we're not talking about a weak stay-at-home flyer like a mosquito where fogging makes a difference. These things are fast flyers, will go long distances. They do tend to be most numerous in shady areas, so avoiding those when they're out and numerous will help some. But no, I don't think any sprays are going to be very effective against these.
I've had them for about 4 years now, and somebody told me they come in cycles of some kind. Do they, or...?
Well, most native insects will be in some cycles. I have not heard or seen or read about these particular ones going in cycles, but I would anticipate that they probably do. Most native insects will be numerous for about 3 years and then very uncommon for 5 to 6 years and then come back and be numerous again. It has relates to temperature and their own predators, how they fluctuate with their prey.
Okay, thanks a lot.
All right, thank you. Let's go here back to line number three, a caller in Philo. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I don't have this problem in Philo, but my son, who lives about 100 miles north, has box elder bugs from box elder trees around his old house, mm-hmm. and they're coming in, and he has used a number of things and can't get rid of them.
Okay. In a very dry, box elder bugs actually have two generations a year. Most people don't realize that. They see them primarily in the fall, but they also come out as adults in June, typically about the middle of June. It was a very hot, dry year. They will many times come to the house then. Or if you have large numbers of box elder trees around, you may see them coming in at that time of year. But primarily, we're looking at the fall of the year. They will come to sunlit surfaces of houses, so they're going to be on the south and west sides primarily. You can kill them in large numbers when they're sitting on the outside of a house with insecticidal soap. This is sold as insecticidal soap in garden centers and hardware stores. You can use that daily if necessary. There is no residual effect. There are really no insecticides that have much of a residual effect on box elder bugs, particularly those that are available to homeowners. But you can spray them with that on a daily basis if necessary to reduce the numbers. Caulking cracks and crevices so they don't come in will help reduce somewhat, but they'll come in around the siding and so on, so that's very, very difficult to do. Other than that, in long-term answer, sometimes I will recommend to people that they plant trees on the south and west sides of the house so that over time those surfaces are shaded and they're not as attractive to the bugs. Box elder bugs, for those people who don't know, are about a half an inch long, black and red in color, flat topped, and they come in large numbers to the house. Also, I've noticed that they're very much attracted to light colors. So if you can have painting the house a more muted earth tone, tends to reduce the number that will show up. You'll still have them, but it won't be near as numerous. Those are all things can be done. Some of them short term, some of them longer term.
Thank you.
Uh-huh. Right, thank you. We had another couple quick questions about dealing with the bagworm. Someone wants to know, is there a particular time of day that's better than another to spray?
They're out there day and night. Any time of day is fine. You don't want to spray when the temperatures are over 80 degrees. You might end up with some burning on the foliage.
And will 7 work on bagworms?
7 will work when they're very, very young. But once the bagworms get about the middle of July, if you spray the bagworm with 7, you listen real close, you can hear them laughing at you.
Phil Nixon, ladies
we'll
and gentlemen, University of Illinois Extension Entomologist. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Once again for being here. Occasionally joins us to help with insect pest problems in the home.